Okay, hi everyone. My name is Thurston, I'm an alcoholic. Yes, pinch hitter. Yeah, I played a little baseball. Yeah, fun sport. But I was taught that, you know, when you're asked to speak for Alcoholics Anonymous, it is an honor, and you should always say yes. And I think back to the very first time I was asked to speak for Alcoholics Anonymous. I didn't think I was ready. And the gentleman that asked me to speak, you know, he and I had shared a lot, you know, of our story and confided in each other a lot. And we heard the message through each other, I think. And he asked me to speak, and I said no. And it really bothered me. You know, it really, really bothered me. And thank God I had a sponsor then and a spiritual advisor, and I asked them about that. And they told me that, you know, I told them I wasn't ready. You know, standing up in front of a group of people and talking about me never was one of my favorite things to do. And they share with me, you know, if you're not ready and you don't feel you're comfortable, it's okay to say no. You know, just don't be so hard on yourself. It's okay. When you're ready, you know, God will let you know, and you'll say yes. So I thank God for Alcoholics Anonymous and the power of being able to share, you know, what's going on inside of me with another man. Because, you know, there was a time when I couldn't do that at all. You know, we talk about, you know, what it used to be like, what happened, and what it's like now. That's the way it used to be like for me. You know, I used to internalize everything. You know, and I was a prideful guy. I thought a lot about myself. I thought a lot of myself. And my forefathers told me that if I did the best that I could with what I had and tried to do the right thing, you know, that I would be okay and I would be happy. But, you know, that last part of it, the happy part, didn't come around every time. So I worked hard, and I played hard, and I wasn't always happy. And alcohol, you know, my first experience with alcohol was when I was a young lad. My dad was a drinker. And he liked Miller High Life beer, and he liked Black Label beer, and he liked Rolling Rock beer. And he had that same mentality. You know, he worked hard, and he played hard. And after a day of work and a lot of times before the end of the day's work, you know, he would have a cold one. And he would come home and he would have some. He would be having a beer and he'd share it with me. And I enjoyed that taste. You know, I hear from the podium a lot of the people talk about, you know, when they had that first drink of alcohol, they knew that was it. Well, it felt good. You know, did it burn? I don't remember that because I was very young. But it made me feel better. I liked the taste of it. And, you know, it made me feel good. So, you know, I look forward to that when he came home sipping off of Dad's beer. But, you know, I grew up in a very normal family. Mom and Dad, you know, both worked hard, both worked. And they provided everything that, you know, we needed. We had everything we needed. Not everything we wanted, but everything we needed. We ate good. We had, you know, I was a child of the 60s, you know, we had, you know, all the necessities of life. I didn't need for anything, but I wanted. I grew to want things that they couldn't provide for me. So there came a time when I was able to, you know, go a job on a dairy farm that was near where we lived. And I started working there when I was 11 years old. I would ride my bike to the farm, and I started up feeding the calves. And then a couple years passed, and desired to make a little bit more money. And we had the cows there. They had a 120-head Ayrshire Holstein milking operation at that time, and I asked the boss man if I could, you know, learn how to do that. And I would often help him, you know, along the way, you know, with the ins and outs, you know, setting up the dairy and shutting down the dairy along the way in my first few years there. So he said, sure, Thurston, I think you've been around here long enough, you know, and we need a man in the dairy right now, so we'll bring you along and get you going in there. And pretty soon, you know, I share with my friends, and you know, I was on the school bus. I mean, I was in the milking parlor at 3:30 in the morning, on the school bus at 8 o'clock, back in the milking parlor at 4 o'clock, and like most times home by 9 or 9:30. And that was my life for a while. But about a year and a half into that, you know, when I was, you know, starting to milk the cows and all, one of the guys that I worked with, I think it was his 16th birthday, and he had decided he was going to go get a case of Stroh's. And me and a couple of the other guys that worked with him were going to enjoy it, celebrate. I was all for that. Yeah, you know, my dad shares beer with me, and I know about beer, and I like a taste of it, so yeah, we can do that. And that's the first time I ever got drunk. You know, and that also was the same day that my mom was supposed to come to the milking parlor that afternoon, that Saturday afternoon, and watch me, you know, milk cows, because she was proud of me, and she wanted to see what I did. And that afternoon, I got filthy drunk that afternoon. And by the grace of God, you know, I was able to scrape myself up out of the loft, because I was sprawled in the loft, throw up all over me. And they hosed me down. I was able to scrape myself up out of the loft and make it to the afternoon milking. And here she comes. She shows up. And by the grace of God, I was able to do that and perform. I mean, I was in sad shape. But I was able to get through it. And I lived a good life. You know, that was my first, like I said, that was the first time I ever got drunk. But my whole childhood life was surrounded around alcohol. I didn't drink much after that for a long time, you know, for years. Because, you know, we worked hard. We played hard. We had motorcycles. One of the guys I worked with on the farm, he's an avid bike rider, so we used to ride our bicycles all over the county. You know, when you talk about Tour de Madison now, you know, it's kind of like what we had back then. And then with our motorcycles, you know, we'd ride the power lines, and we'd hunt, and we'd fish, and do the normal things that guys did. You know, farm shows, those kinds of things. But then there came a time, you know, when I was able to get my driver's license. You know, I had my own car. By the grace of God, you know, I was able to save up to do that. And then I could go to the store and get my own beer. And I was only 16. And I would always go to the store with my dad when he got his. And when I went to the store to get my own, guys always thought I was just getting it for him. You know, they didn't ID me. And, you know, they didn't card me, as they say today. They thought I was getting it for dad. But I was getting it for me. And that was cool. You know, I thought, yeah, that's cool. But, you know, I would have it around because, you know, I never could get up enough strength, you know, to ask a girl for a date, you know, or just wanting to have that, you know, reach that buzz myself and have my own substance. You know, I wanted to do it on my own. So I always had some beer in the trunk of the car. You know, I used to say my car ran on beer because I had it in the trunk, in the cooler, iced down. And if it wasn't that, it was some form of Canadian Mist or rum or Everclear with a half gallon, you know, of juice and most of it Everclear in there. The party was in my car. And I had a lot of, I heard shared from the podium here a couple Sundays ago. I mean, it was last Sunday. Non-approved Alcoholics Anonymous substances were part of my story, too. But I never thought I had a problem with them. You know, because I could leave them alone and everything would be cool. But I've come to understand, you know, that alcohol was my downfall. You know, I never could not have it. You know, I didn't have to have a lot of it, but I had to have a little bit every now and then, a little bit every day. You know, I'm the typical guy. The standard answer is two. You know, but you couldn't have told me, you know, years ago that I had a disease. You know, obsession of the mind. You couldn't have told me that I had that, those kinds of things. But, you know, I went on, you know, living my life, trying to be comfortable, you know, and always overshot the mark. I didn't have a girlfriend in high school, middle school, and I had a lot of girls that I wanted to ask out on dates, but I never got up the nerve to ask them. And when I was inebriated enough and I had the buzz enough to do that, I'm like, well, shoot, you know, I got the party right here. I might as well just keep on drinking. Yeah, I don't need a girl to do that. You know, I'm going to just keep on doing it. And thus, you know, the consequences would come. I was a blackout drinker. I was often present for a lot of things I don't remember. I had to face myself in the mirror a lot, you know, the next day, the next morning. You know, how did I get here? You know, wow, what happened? And I did a lot of my drinking, you know, with my cousins who lived down the road from me. You know, after work, I would go to their house, and we would drink, and we would smoke. And a lot of times, I would say, fall asleep, you know, on their couch. I fell asleep on their couch, and they put their arms around me. You know, they made sure I didn't hurt myself. Made sure I didn't hurt anybody else. It was okay if I stayed down there, you know. A lot of times, I left my car at their house and walked back up, stumbled, staggered back up to my house, which is, you know, a couple blocks from theirs. And I'd wake up in the morning, you know, to get ready to go to work. And I go outside and was like, where's my car? Where did I park my car at? You know, and wait a minute, I was down their house last night. You know, so I'd walk back down there and there's my car at their house. And then, you know, that graduated. Well, because all they wanted to do was stay at their house and have the party. They didn't want to go anywhere else. You know, there's a lot of world out there to see. You know, I want to go places. So I would, you know, go out to parties or to other folks' houses and party with them. And never ever would give the keys to anybody. You know, I'm still having the problem passing out, blacking out, being present for things I don't remember. I would not give up my keys. And a lot of times, you know, quite a few times I would wake up in my mom's driveway in my car, and my car's still running. I mean, man, you know, having to face myself in the mirror or you know, go in the house and face mom. And luckily, you know, my mom worked two jobs, so she would leave early for the school. She was a cafeteria manager at the elementary school over here. She would leave early for that one. So most times when I would come in like that, she wouldn't even be home. She'd be gone already. So a lot of times I didn't have to face her, but I'd have to face me. You know, and a lot of those times I don't remember. You know, and my story, you know, is true. You know, I was a blackout drinker. I don't remember the details of those events. You know, and I don't remember a lot of the faces of or names of people that I was even with. I remember where I went initially, but I was able to motivate and do through those blackouts. You know, a lot of times I wasn't just out of it. I was functioning, but I don't remember. I do not remember. But I'm grateful for the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. It lets me know what's wrong with me today. It lets me know what was wrong with me then. Because, you know, when I actually was starting to get honest about the fact that I had a problem and I knew that I had a problem and my willpower wasn't enough, I thought I was crazy. You know, what is wrong with me? Everybody else around me, they celebrate. You know, they can have one drink. I can have half a drink and sit on the table and leave it alone. Of course, I think they're crazy for doing that. But what's wrong with me? Why can't I just have just one? You know, why can't I have a couple, you know, honestly, and be okay? And disease, you know, you guys told me about, I heard about that disease, you know, years ago. I'm like, I'm a healthy guy. I ain't got no disease. You know, I lift weights regularly. You know, I'm in good shape. You know, I'm a strong young man, strapping young man. I got a good job and I can perform the labor part or the social part or the mental part. I can do all of that. You know, I don't have no disease. What's that? So, you know, see, I didn't identify. I didn't identify, so, but, you know, on and on with that, and, you know, they were to graduate high school and then go on to work over at Continental Tevis immediately after high school, and worked there. Wow, that was a party. Partying before going to Tevis, because I worked the second shift. You know, if I worked in the evenings, I could party all day long, go to work with a little buzz on, get my job done. Come home in the evening, you know, get off at 11 o'clock, 12 o'clock, have a little party before I go to bed, and everything's cool. You know, life was a party. It was fun. You know, and then at Tevis, too, wow, we partied in the parking lot back then. Clocked out for lunch, go out to the parking lot and pop the trunks, coolers out, and everybody's just having a good old time. You can't do that today out there anymore. No, can't do that today. But that's the way I lived life at that era for a long time. And then, you know, time came to where I thought I was going to get laid off. So I joined up for the Air Force. And all my cousins, you know, my brothers, we had never said that we're never going to go in the military. We ain't going to do that. You know, we like it here. We like what we do. Life is good here. We're going to stay around here. Our cars are going to run on beer. And we're just going to enjoy life. But we're not going in the military. We ain't got to do that. You know, by the grace of God, all of us wound up going into the military, and I signed up for the Air Force because I thought I was going to get laid off. And at that time, I was like, wow, how am I going to join the Air Force and not smoke pot? You know, how am I going to let that go? Never, alcohol, that wasn't my problem, you know. I didn't have a problem with alcohol because guys in the military, they work hard, they play hard, and they drink too, you know. That was going to be okay. military, drinking. My dad used to tell those stories a lot about, you know, drinking in the military because he was in the Army. But my thing was, you know, Pop, how am I going to not do that? Well, they didn't test us before we went in, so I got to go in. No problem, passed the physical. But it was, you know, but it wasn't a problem. And I didn't have a problem not doing it. And then I went into the Air Force. My first duty station was Nellis Air Force Base in Las Vegas, Nevada. I was stationed in Red Flag there. And we trained fighter pilots for different sorties from all over the world. They came there for exercises, and I worked in Red Flag Admin. And I set up the ComSec for all of the sorties for the fighter pilots. And the pilots, when they come back from the sorties, you know, they're ready to relax, unwind, get their debrief and their popcorn and their coffee. My first experience with coffee, by the way, because I always hated coffee, was with them. I had to make it for every sortie. And when the exercises were done, the pilots came back. They wanted their coffee and their popcorn. But I was there, and there was always a party at one of their hotels, you know, or on base somewhere. Somebody was having a party in their dorm. And the pot, it was there, because, you know, guys would stuff towels under the doors in their rooms and just light up. But I didn't do any pot while I was in the Air Force, you know, because I worked right in squadron admin and had to type up a lot of the Article 15s for the guys that got busted. But I didn't do that, but I was definitely a part of, you know, the drinking parties. And it went okay. You know, I had bouts of where I thought I was going to lose it, but I didn't black out too much. Until I moved off base with one of the guys in my office. He was actually my sponsor when I came to Vegas, and I moved off base with him into the apartment that we had out there. And that was a big-time party, and we drank every night. And we were in Las Vegas, you know, because in Las Vegas we could work all day long, you know, come home, relax, go to bed, get a couple hours sleep, and then go downtown and party and make it back, you know, to the apartment enough, you know, to get some relaxation and go back to work. But that was big time party. That was fun, fun, fun. But the blackouts came more and more, you know. My object was to go downtown, you know, to the casinos and enjoy that, you know, and enjoy Vegas and that part of it. But the booze was free. You know, the more you gambled, the more they brought you. They brought you more and more. And if you asked her to bring you a strong one, they would do it. And see, I would always overshoot that mark. Always overshoot the mark. And my buddies would always wind up, again, putting their arm around me, bringing me home, making sure I didn't hurt myself or somebody else while I was down there on the strip or dunes or the sands or whatever casino we were at, you know. And the problem was still there, the drink problem. And I had to face myself in the mirror. You know, I was always on time for work. I never, ever, ever missed work. Not even when I worked on the farm, in the military. You know, I was a sharp troop, and I was always there. My sponsor told me, you know, we're good at what we do. And I took pride in my profession, in my job. And Airman of the Quarter, Airman of the Wing, I always showed up for that. You know, and you guys talk about the way I dress today. You know, I say, you know, making my dad proud. You know, it started with him. He showed me how to do it, and my mom, you know, she made sure that we had it to have on, and it's just stuck with me, you know. And I feel better, you know, when I dress appropriately. And I like dressing down, too, don't get me wrong. You know, I like to get in the yard and get dirty and get in the garden, but I feel better, you know, when I, you know, do well. But, yeah, I mean, you know, Air Force was good, except for the blackout part. And then, you know, I got orders to go to Germany. And my first time overseas, and the beer steins were taller over there, and the beer is stronger. They said, Thurston, when you go to Germany, watch out for that. They sell beer in the barracks in the soda machine. Watch out for that beer. And as soon as I got there, I had to have one. I didn't grab a soda out of the soda machine. I got a beer out of the soda machine. And, yeah, it was strong. It was strong. And, you know, the German restaurants, the beer, the steins are tall, And the Germans bring beer to work. They have it in their little cases, you know. You see them with it on the trains. You see them with it on the buses. You see them with it. They got their lunchbox, and then they got a beer holder, you know. And, of course, they make it and all of that. You know, their life is full of beer. I'm like, yeah, this is where I want to be. You know, I'm in heaven here. You know, I'm a beer drinker. I'm gonna like this. But I was there for like 10 months before family was able to make it over there with me. And family finally came, and life got a little rocky then. It was okay when it was just me, but life got a little rocky, and my drinking got in the way, and the wife wasn't acting or talking the way I wanted her to talk one day. So I decided I was going to go downtown with my beer in my car, drive it. And I got pulled over by the Polizei. You know, in Germany, you know, they got all these buses and all these trains. You know, a bus would pull up to my house, and I'd get on it, and I'd go wherever I wanted to go. Right, they let me off, you know, front door most places, or just a block or so away, and you just walk right there. But I went on my own in my car, and I was drinking under the influence of alcohol. And they pulled me over, and they smelt it on my breath, and they yanked me out of my car, and they put me in their German jail. They didn't appreciate that too much. And then they called, you know, my first sergeant and all, and the Air Force comes and picks me up, and they put me in the jail. Yeah. And then through the system and all that, you know, I got my first DUI there, and immediately they put me on the psych ward. You know, at Wiesbaden Hospital, they put me on the psych ward. I'm like, well, what am I doing in here, you know? I'm not crazy. I just got a DUI. Why do I have to come here? Well, it's in the bylaws and in the rules. If you get a DUI, you know, overseas, you know, in a foreign country, you have to go through a psychiatric evaluation, and that's why I was there. And that's when I was first introduced to the program of Alcoholics Anonymous in 1984. And I had to do my the steps and inventory, and I lied all the way through it. And I told them what they wanted to hear. I did not want to be there. It was the wife's fault. She was the reason I got caught anyway. You know, it was her fault that I was out drinking. Any other time I would have been at home, but it was her fault, and I don't want to be here. I do not want to be here. But I had to do something. They weren't going to let me out. I had to do something, so I had to go through the motions and do what it was they wanted me to do. So I was able to do that. And, man, you know, after going through that, you know, I was able to go back to my normal life over there. And I'm like, well, I'll get a job as a barback at the NCO club. You know, so we need some money. But as also being a barback, you know, the bartender makes mistakes, you know, they're lined up right there. And I ain't got to buy booze. And the system over there also told me that, you know, I had to go to meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous, but I never went. I never went. And they never called me out on it for some reason. I don't know why, but I never went. And, you know, of course, being that bar back there, I went, you know, free booze and more of that, but that havoc in my life with alcohol was free, and all the mistakes. I drank as many of them as I could, and stumbled home again. And then it came to a point where, you know, I just couldn't function. My work was starting to, performance was starting to slip. So I decided I better slow down with that. And I did. And I was able to make it through my tour there in Germany and come back here stateside. And by that time, you know, it had been, after I stopped, you know, being the bar back and drinking at the club, it had probably been 3 years where I was sober. No alcohol. No Alcoholics Anonymous. And that was the most miserable 3 years of my life. Miserable 3 years. I was always irritated, easily rash, you know, and I just was not comfortable in my own skin. But, you know, I come back stateside, you know, and I'm like, wow, you know, well, I've been good for a little while. And nobody knows that I nobody knows that I admitted to being an alcoholic. So I still struggle when I say that word. Nobody knows that I admitted to being an alcoholic. You know, so why can't I just have another one? And, you know, I can just have one. It'll be okay. I've been good for 3 years. I haven't had anything. It should be all right. And this, like you guys tell me, you know, this disease is progressive. And it's like I never stopped. You know, I had one, and one wasn't enough. One was not enough. I was off to the races. And immediately, you know, I was going to, we're going to bowling in Charlottesville. I'm here, my wife and my cousin had come home from Germany. He was in the Army. He'd come home for leave. We were going bowling in Charlottesville. We had some beer in the car, and we had some beer while we were there. And coming back from the bowling alley, you know, I was speeding coming through Greene County. And the cops pulled me over. And that was my first DUI stateside. And a year and a half without a regular license, 6 months unrestricted, I mean 6 months without a license, and then a year unrestricted, and then the VASAP class. And again, going through the VASAP system, you know, I lied. You know, I lied. I didn't identify. I watched all those Dr. Bob tapes and all that stuff they showed. I did not want to be there. And I lied, you know. I'm like, I just want you guys to show me I can go back out there into the world and drink peaceably. You know, and time went by, and I got my license back. And got through the system and went right back to drinking again. Went right back to drinking again. It's like, bam, I hadn't had my license back maybe a month. And I got another DUI. Got another DUI and ordered again to come to the system of through the system of Alcoholics Anonymous in the VASAP classes. Had to do 16 weeks of VASAP classes that time and no license for 3 years. And the first year without a license, I drove. You know, I just registered my car. Tags were fresh on my car. I'm not going to just gonna let it sit there and I ain't going to drive it. So, you know, I drove it. I would slump down on my seat. I'd wear a hat and cock it, you know, this side or the other. And I would do that, and I drove, man. I was on, you think I was on pins and needles when I would see a cop when I was drinking and driving. I had a license. I was really on pins and needles then. Because no license, and I'm driving, and I'm not supposed to be driving, and I'm in the system. Wow, you know, they're going to put me under jail if they caught me. But a year of that, and I stopped, and I finally parked my car. And I still, you know, I didn't come here much. I was supposed to come here, but I didn't come around here much. Those were the times where I would come to the door of an AA meeting, and I would get right to the door, and I'd turn around and I'd walk away. Or if I made it into the room of Alcoholics Anonymous, I'd come into the room, and I'd sit way in the back, like way back there where John said that. And you guys always talk about, stay around after the meeting. You know, share some experience, strength, and hope. Sometimes the meeting after the meeting can be the best one. Before the meeting is even over, I was out the door. I didn't want to talk to anybody. Now, what could you guys do for me? You know, I heard some of the similarities when I would come here and listen, but I didn't identify because I didn't want to be here. I did not want to be here. But I was able to make it through that VASAP account again. I was able to make it through it. 3 years without a license that time. And, you know, the guys at work, they would come pick me up. Bosses, you know, we'll come pick you up. They would come pick me up, take me to work, bring me back home when work was over. If I needed to go to the grocery store, Mom would take me. One of the guys from work would take me. Any place I needed to go, you know, God put people in my life to make sure I got there, make sure it got done. Because Alcoholics Anonymous has taught me, you know, that he wasn't done with me yet. It was his footsteps in the sand all along. And it took me 5 DUIs, you know, to finally come here and get the one I got in Germany, and I got 4 more before I was able to finally get it. And this last one, I was in town, you know, I lost my son in 2003. And I was in town, and I was at a club over there. I was at a club over there, downtown, at the club in Culpeper. I think it was called The Pub. One of my guys had that I used to work with, his mother passed away. And they were going to have a thing down there for him. And I hadn't drank for a little bit, you know, before that. And I'm like, well, you know, I should go in support of him. Because you know, he was a good friend for a long time. He's one of those guys that helped me out when I needed it. And I was like, I've been okay. I've been a good boy for a while. So I can go there. And you guys tell me, and I know today that when that opportunity crossed paths with that obsession, I was going to drink. And I did. Because I had been good. You know, but I went there, and somebody bought me a beer, and they brought it to the table. And said, Thurston, here, there's your first beer. You got like 4 others lined up for you. People wondering, where you been, man? Where you been? You used to be a regular here. And they're glad you're back. So you ain't got to buy a beer tonight, but it's all you want. It's right here. So I had that one, and then they brought that one. When that was finished, they brought another. and another, and another, and I'm like, okay, I've been here long enough. And after sharing and giving my condolences to him and his family and spending time with him, I'm like, well, I'm going home. It's time for me to go now. I think I'm sober enough. I said to myself, I think I'm sober enough where I can leave here and I can make it home. And it was in December. It was right around Christmas time, and I'm like, well, Thurston, this will probably be the last time this year you go out. And usually we would always close the pub and go to 401 and dance after the pub closed. And I said when I left the pub, you know, I wasn't going to 401. But I got in my car and I started up the street, one block, two blocks, stop sign. There's the pub right there. I'm like, man, you can go in there and shake a leg for a little bit, you know. Be next year before you go out again, you might as well go on in there, and you don't have to drink. So I pulled in there, and I went in there, and as soon as I walked in, I walked right up to the bar, and I ordered a Long Island iced tea. And I drank it fast. I never could just sip a drink. When they talk about swirling wine, you know, in the end, you know, wine was part of my alcoholic diet, and I never could sip wine either. I enjoyed the taste of it, and I downed that Long Island iced tea. And right after that one, I had another one. You know, another one, because the last call came. And I had to have that extra drink and then be able to rush to the dance floor and get a couple of dances before I got out of there. So I was able to do that. And on the way out of the door, after all that, on the way out of the door, a girl that used to be my neighbor on the other side of town was standing outside. And I bumped into her and said, hey, how you doing? Good, good, good. And I saw her daughter was in the club, too. I'm like, well, where's your daughter at? She was inside. Where's she at? She's gone already. I said, so you need a ride? She was like, yeah. I was like, man, I don't want to go across town. You know, I can just get right on 29 right here, and I'll be on my way home, you know, free. I don't want to go across town because I know those cops are in town just waiting for me, you know. But, you know, being the kind-hearted guy that I was, I couldn't leave the girl out there in the cold. So we got in my convertible, and we're going down the back street, doing about 20 miles an hour, doing the speed limit, doing slow, and then we come to the stoplight. He says, you got a nice car. This is a nice car. I'm like, yeah, and it'll go, too. She's like, really? And what does she say that for? And the light turned green, and I stepped on the accelerator, and ooh, I'm gone. And before I could get to the next block, the blue light was right behind me. The blue light was right behind me. And they pulled me over again. Here I break out in handcuffs again. You know, trying to do somebody a favor. I break out in handcuffs, and here I go to jail again. And, you know, I thought I was going to get out of there quick that time. I thought I was going to be able to, because, you know, this was DUI number 5. And my lawyer told me, you know, that you'll be okay. I thought I was going to, no, I take that back. I really thought I was going to go away for a while. I thought I was going to go away for a long time. And when it was able, my lawyer said, you'll be okay. One of the DUIs, you know, it had been some time, and it fell off my record. So it wasn't a felony. But the lawyer said, you'll be okay. You'll be able to get here in like 20 days. Well, the laws have changed again. You know, back time didn't count. And I wound up having to spend 45 days in jail. But luckily, you know, I'd come off of a really good month at work, and I had 2 weeks of vacation, so I was able to make it through that. So, but I know today, you know, God kept me in jail for a while so I could start to look at myself. And I did a lot of writing while I was in there. And people talk about, why does everybody that goes to jail find the Bible? You know, why do they find God when they go to jail? Well, the Bible's in there. You know, and one of the big guys in the Bible is Paul, and he was incarcerated when he was telling his story about, you know, what God can do for us, because he did it for him. And I know today that that's, you know, that's part of the reason why I was able to find it. God said it was time for me to start hearing it. He pointed me to that story, and I was able to start looking at it and identifying with me. But you know, still after those 45 days, when I came out, I was still that same alcoholic guy, still kicking and scratching. I'm not an alcoholic. Sponsor, I ain't getting no sponsor. 36 weeks of ASAP. You know, and then DMV says, after the court, Culpeper County Court said I could get my license back, DMV says, no, you're not going to drive for another 3 years. No, you can't do that. Well, they did it. You know, they did it. And by the grace of God, you know, God brought me a sponsor. You know, the man would come by my office. He said, "Thurston, I heard you've been through it again. I heard you've been to that place again." I'm like, "What's he talking about? And I don't know him like that. What does he know?" Well, I knew where I'd been. And he'd leave a card on his one of his cards on my desk, and he'd leave. And I'd take that card, and I'd put it there, and I'd look at it, slide it under my blotter, I'd pull it out, I'd look at it, slide it under my blotter. A couple days go by, and there'd be another card on my desk. He'd been there again. Well, I wasn't there. And the next time, I put the card in my pocket. And I keep business cards in my pocket all the time, some of mine, some of my other customers. And I always pull his out, and I'd look at it. And about 10 weeks went by, and I hadn't been to any Alcoholics Anonymous meetings yet. And every time I go to those face-out meetings, they would ask you, "Have you been to AA meetings yet? Is everybody here going to AA meetings?" And I would lie. I was like, "Yeah, I've been." And the one time they said, "You know, well, we know whether or not you're going, because we have people that are there that watch you and check to make sure you're going." And I'm like, in my mind, I'm like, "Really? Really?" Well, I figured then I better start going. So I called the guy that's now my sponsor. I called him up and I told him, "So I don't know where it is you want to take me or where you want to go, but I need to go somewhere to deal with this problem that I got." And I knew where it was he wanted to take me. I knew where it is he wanted to go. And we decided on the time, and he asked me which meeting was best for me. I said, "Well, the only one I really know of is the one over there at the hospital. You know, they call it New Birth, I think, on Thursday nights." He says, "Well, we can go there. I'll pick you up about a half hour before time, and we'll have a little meeting on the way, and we'll go there. We'll get started." And he did. He came by just like he said he would. He showed up a little bit early and on my job, and I told my bosses and stuff, you know, that I was going to start going. And they were okay with it. You know, I thought, you know, I would have something to deal with there by letting them know, but they were okay with it. So we're just lucky. We're just lucky we didn't get caught. We've been where you are. And been behind bars, but, you know, we know what you're going through. And we went. And there started, you know, the meeting in the truck. You know, him sharing his experience, strength, and hope. You know, and me being able to identify with the feelings that he put forth, you know, from his experiences and the stories that he's had about his alcoholism and his drinking. And me to be able to start identifying with the whole process of Alcoholics Anonymous. Because, you know, for a long time, I thought I was the only one. I thought nobody else feels like me, been through what I've been through. You know, nobody else has got cars in their driveway that they can't drive. And nobody else has got people that don't act like they want them to act, so they go out and drink over it. You know, I'm the only one. Why me, me, me? But, you know, the time I was able to spend with that man helped me to identify and understand that I wasn't the only one. You know, and through that, you know, I look forward to those meetings. I look forward to getting in his truck with him and going to meetings. And he took me places I never knew existed. You know, church down in Rapidan, I never went and partied on that road. I never knew that church was there. And other places that he took me. And he said, "I'm going to take you to meetings where you're going to see people that you know. You know, and they've been through what you've been through, and they work the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, and you'll understand them too." And he takes me to one meeting, and Sammy P's there. I used to go through his line at the liquor store a lot. You know, I'm like, "What are you doing here? You're in the Alcoholics Anonymous? Wow. You know, if he's here, I know I can do it." But I still didn't want to do it. You know, I know I can do it. But again, you know, the sponsorship. You know, we're like brothers today, you know. And just the fact that I could learn and be able to take and get new ideas from another man is so freeing to me and been a big part of my sobriety. So that's something that I never, ever, ever wanted to do. I internalized everything. I never wanted to share my stuff with somebody else, let alone another man I didn't even know. And the fact that I can do that today and find solution in my life, you know, just by being able to show concern from somebody else is powerful. And, you know, the power and unity, that's one of the concepts that I love about Alcoholics Anonymous, is how we can come together and we can share our experience, strength, and hope. And just by getting out of ourselves, being concerned about somebody else, it gets me out of my head, helps me be able to slow that hamster wheel down. And it's all by the grace of God that I'm able to do that today. But yeah, you know, so meetings in the truck and meeting new friends and coming around. And there came a time where, you know, my sponsor says, there's going to come a time when you're going to want more and more of what it is these people got. You know, because I'm not the guy that's going to take you through the steps or the big book. But you're going to find somebody that you're going to want to go through that with. Because I can see how you are. I can see you're interested in the stuff. I can see you're lighting up. You know, me and you, we have a meeting in the truck or we go out to dinner somewhere and we sit and we talk. And I can see where you're really getting in touch with this AA thing. And you're going to want more. And you'll know who it is. God will show you. He'll let you know who it is. And there came a time where, you know, my sponsor had to go in different directions and he wasn't so available to go to meetings and stuff anymore. And this guy was. And he would come by my job and he'd pick me up and he'd take me to meetings and make sure I got to the Monday night meeting and this and that and the other. And we started talking about service positions and the steps. And he says, yeah, that's what you need. We need a service position. And we need a coffee maker at the Sunday night speakers meeting. Would you want to do that? Well, Sunday night's a day where I like to drink. Do I want to be at an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting on a Sunday night? I think I need to be at an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting on a Sunday night. So, yeah. And I did, like I said, my first experience was with coffee. It was in the Air Force, but it was automatic, and it's done. When I came here, started making coffee, I actually learned how to make coffee. And I knew that alcoholics like their coffee. They like it on time. They like it here when the meeting starts, and we're going to come early, and we're going to set up and do those kinds of things, learn some accountability along the way, and also get me outside of that comfort zone where I was used to drinking. I had to fill that void with something, or you fellas in Alcoholics Anonymous know, left to my own devices, I would go right back. So I thank God for the concept of fellowship and service. And for about a year and a half, almost 2 years, that service position kept me sober. And the fellowship that I got from it, you know, kept me sober. And there came the time where, you know, I need to go through the step thing. I heard somebody say something about enlarging your program. You know, and letting go of the stuff that you've been carrying around for years. I know I had to do that because I started to, that hamster was kind of turning. It never started spinning, but it would start turning. And I knew I had to do something. So I asked him if he would go through the steps with me. And he said, and he agreed. He said, I've helped quite a few people, and a sponsor is somebody that wants to help. And we'll agree on a day and a time, and we'll get going. And we started out doing it at my house, and then there were times we could do it at his house. And when we got to that fourth step, that was a real stickler for me. And when I had to write down on paper, you know, those people. And for a long time, you know, for a couple of weeks, I'm like, well, I ain't wrong nobody. They wrong me. Who am I going to write down? But it wasn't true. You know, it wasn't that way. You know, I'd really, you know, wrong some people. So I put the list down on paper and got there, and I mean, got to the fourth column, and then I had to put, you know, what was my part in it? Where was I wrong? And that was hard, too. That was really, really hard. And I did that, and my sponsor had to help me see the pattern. He had to help me see the patterns that was there, where I was procrastinating and where I did not communicate with people, you know. And then I would justify, you know, within myself, trying to be comfortable, I'd justify how I thought the situation would go, what I thought they should say, how it should all come out. And a lot of times I wouldn't even communicate any of it with them. I would just walk around, you know, and do the best I could, but not communicate with the people that were involved. And, you know, I was living in expectation. And when things didn't go my way, I come to date to understand that I'd always set myself up for the fall. Set myself up for the fall every time. But I thank God, you know, for the process of Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, to be able to do that with another alcoholic and get to the fifth step where I could actually share it with another man. Because, wow, you know, when I was able to do that, it was so freeing to be able to share that with another alcoholic, another man that would keep me accountable and help me see my part in it. And then I could let go of it. You know, I didn't have to make stuff up anymore. And I could finally look the world in the eye because of what I'd done. And I could look the world in the eye going forward. You know, I could communicate with people. I could let them know how I felt. I didn't have to let people step on me. You know, I could be a part of. You know, It was a big, huge weight to let me know that, you know, that higher power wanted to care for me too, if I could just, you know, be a part of what he wants me to do instead of internalizing and doing all the things that I used to do. And that was so freeing. And then here we are at step 7, humbly asking to remove our shortcomings. Wow. A lot of humbling in the first 6 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, let me know that it wasn't about me at all. And that that higher power really, really, really wanted to care for me. All I had to do was just let go of the bondage of me, get out of my own way, and let him. And you know, and I know today, you know, on a daily basis that I can ask him for guidance. You know, ask him to help me be the person that he wants me to be and to be of maximum service to him and the people about me. And the next right thing is easier. I don't stumble too much, you know, because of it. But, you know, challenges do come. You know, I don't have to be right every time. I can learn from it. And if I can't understand it, you know, I can call up a sponsor, another AA brother. I can go to a meeting and I can hear what it is I need to hear. You know, I don't have to leave it stuck up here. I don't carry stuff around anymore the way I used to do. I used to carry stuff around for days, months, weeks, years. And Alcoholics Anonymous taught me, you know, that's the stuff that I wanted to stuff away is the very stuff that my higher power uses to clean me up. It's the very thing he uses to clean me up. So I get it on the outside, name it, claim it, and I can move on. You know, I can live spiritually instead of naturally. That knee-jerk reaction that I've heard about. You know, I can try to look at things spiritually today. And then, you know, that amends list that we put down, you know, I can go back out into the world and ask them what I can do, you know, to make it right. You know, and when I was able to do that, you know, my kids, you know, I did a lot of my drinking around them when they were in bed. You know, and the drinking that they saw me do when they weren't asleep, they said, "Dad, you were a happy drunk." You know, they used that word drunk because I used it. I mean, you were happy when you drank. We didn't experience any of that bad stuff that Mom talks about. But we're glad you go to the meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous, because when you come back from those meetings and you hang out with your friends there, you light up. I mean, you're just a much more peaceful person, and we enjoy being around you, so just continue to do what it is you're doing now. Keep going. And I remember one time, my mom was giving me a ride to a meeting out here. It was Mother's Day, and she gave me a ride to a meeting, and I didn't have the wherewithal to put together a Mother's Day gift for that holiday. And I told her, I said, "Mom, you know, I don't have a gift for you this holiday, but, you know, I love you and thank you for being my mom." And she said, "Well, that's okay. You don't have to give me anything. But you just keep going to Alcoholics Anonymous. Keep living the way you've been living. Keep doing what you've been doing. And that's the best gift I could ever have. The best gift." And I thank God for that, you know, because, you know, I talk a lot about, you know, how I wronged myself. But, you know, today I can be a better son to my mom. You know, my dad's gone, and he was an alcoholic too. And I remember Mom talking about, you know, going to the Methodist church meeting with him. But my dad's gone, and he was an alcoholic too. And I can't make an amends to him, but I can be a better son, you know, for him. And my relationship with my mother and doing for her and that kind of thing. And then continue to take personal inventory. When we were wrong, promptly admit it. You know, that's something I grow and grow at on a daily basis. You know, I can recognize today because of Alcoholics Anonymous that those characters that I have inside of me, when we talk about character defects, God gave me character. God knows who I am. And Alcoholics Anonymous has taught me, you know, and I'm good enough for him just like I am. It's okay to be me. But, you know, it's my goal to be of maximum service to him. So God's will for me, you know, today I understand it's just doing the next right thing. I ain't got to figure everything out, you know, because I have a no right and a no wrong. And like my sponsor likes to say, you know, we can make decisions today. My brother in Culpeper tells me it's a program of decisions. So do I make a good decision or a bad decision? I don't always make the best one. But I don't make as many bad ones as I used to make either. You know, so through the guidance of my higher power and the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, I can do that, you know, and I ain't got to figure out what God wants me to do. I just do what's in front of me, and he does the rest, you know. He brought me here and left my own devices. You know, I couldn't change myself. I couldn't do it. I thought I could do it. I thought I could do it, but you guys told me. Told me early on, I heard early on, I had to change that I into thy. His will be done, not mine. You know, what would he do? Start to think spiritually and not naturally. What would God do? Would God go down the highway drinking and driving? No. Okay. Is that responsible? No. You know, is my way or the highway God's way? No. So I've had to learn that I do the opposite of those things, be considerate of other people instead of myself. And life's okay. And it's not as boring as it sounds, as it sounded when I first came here. Life is good today. You know, I like my life in Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm not all caught up in my own head in the bondage of what I want to do. You know, I can be a part of life today. I can. My actions are better today. My life is better today because of Alcoholics Anonymous. And then sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as I understand him. You know, I didn't have a relationship with God when I first came here. And I know today that, you know, it's by his grace that I'm here. And when I'm able to sit down in my meditation spot in the morning and, you know, read my daily bread and meditate on my daily reflection and then say a little prayer after that, you know, my conscious contact with him grows. And, you know, that prayer and meditation, sometimes, you know, I don't always pray in the morning. I don't always do it. But, you know, that's my intention. But I don't always do it. And those days when I don't, you know, sometimes it's hard. It's hard to get out of that funk that I'm in because self is right there trying to take the wheel back. And, you know, and it's just one morning. You know, the self is right there. And I know then, you know, I'm still an alcoholic. You know, I can say the serenity prayer and I can go out. My spiritual advisor says, go help somebody. Do something for somebody else if you can't immediately get out of it. Get out of your own head. You know, what are you feeling self-centered about? What's really the problem? I can do that today. What's different today because of Alcoholics Anonymous? Those kinds of things are different today because the natural me, the old me, would just pick up a drink. Why not just go have a drink? You know? And but, you know, it's through prayer and meditation based on the maintenance of my spiritual condition that I'm able to do that today. And then, you know, carrying the message, you know, being able to stand up, just first show up amongst a room of alcoholics and share with them, be considerate of them, and make sure the hand of AA is there first. And then secondly, after I've got it, after I finally got what it is you guys got, you know, it's because of you guys I'm able to stand up here and talk today. Like I shared, you know, I used to be like John in the back of the room. And I would scoot that chair back. So I'd have an easy way out of there. So I'd have an easy way out of here. And I'd be gone. But today, you know, I can come and I can be a part of it. I ain't gotta take off, you know. I can stand up here and I can share. I can stand up here and share what you guys have shared with me that works for you. Because it's worked for me. You know, my faith in the program has grown. And that other fellowship, my spiritual advisor tells me that everybody's got faith. But, you know, I tore it down when I used to drink and drug. I tore it down and blocked myself from anything that God ever wanted to give for me. And Alcoholics Anonymous has put me back in touch with that faith. It's put me back in touch with the light. And by the grace of my higher power, I'm able to stand up here today and give back what you guys have given me. And let you know that it works for me. And I know that it'll work for you, too. Thanks for letting me share.